Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration. Dave, I have the pleasure of talking to many of our guests about collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you at the Maritime Administration leveraging partnerships to improve operations and program outcomes? And I really would like you to talk about how you deal with the stakeholders in the industry.
Well, we have so many different partners to help us achieve our goals and really make our agency success. So it is a constant challenge to make sure that we are engaging with them at every level of the agency, whether it's another federal agency or if it's an industry partner, whether it's somebody in the on the labor side or the environmental community, or even in the media. Because we're a promotional agency, we have some of our biggest challenges are trying to get our message out there and try and let people know just how important this industry is. I can tell you one of the frustrations that I share with many people in the industry is that, you know, we go to a lot of events where it'll be a ceremony or some kind of recognition for the good work that gets done. You know, just there's so many great examples of it. But we keep going to the same ceremonies with the same people, and our message doesn't get out. People just don't understand what a fantastic job the maritime industry is doing and the great examples of it. So that's one of our big challenges. But working with our stakeholders, I can tell you that, you know, I've invited in to our headquarters just about every CEO from this industry, whether it's the shippers, the shipbuilders, the labor union heads, and really tried to get a conversation going with them and understand what the key needs. We have learned so much from those types of discussions that it really helps us focus and set the dial for the direction we want to go. We also work closely, I think I mentioned, with our other federal partners, not just within the building, you know, the other DOT agencies, but, you know, again, the military, Department of State, we work closely with Department of Energy now. We're, you know, all kinds of partners we have to really make our operation work and work well. Recently, the Secretary has gone forward with a new advisory committee. So now we have a formal committee we can charge, you know, tasks with and also receive formal advice from.
Well, picking up on the idea of making your agency work well, and what are you doing to ensure you have a well-trained and technical workforce to meet the challenges of today as well as the opportunities of tomorrow?
Well, the one good thing about the maritime industry is I found people are so mission-focused and dedicated that we often don't have much of a problem finding good people to work at the Maritime Administration. The challenge is keeping them and growing the next generation as well. Like I said, it's getting harder and harder. It's the same challenge that we face is what everybody in the maritime industry faces, and that's how do we make this industry sexy for the next generation. Because the kids that are going to school may not understand what it's like to work on a ship or have any desire to work on a ship or anywhere in this industry. It may be tough to keep even skilled jobs like welders, for instance. It is. I've talked to so many shipyard owners that say, you know, we spend so much time and money training welders, and then they can just walk off, you know, the next day after they're trained and go get a great job, you know, in another type of manufacturing industry. But welding for ships is a very specialized type of welding, and it takes that specialized training. So it is a challenge to make sure you keep people and get them excited at a very young age into the maritime industry. And again, that is one of our key challenges.
So I want to transition to the future. Would you give us a sense of the key trends that will impact the U.S. maritime transportation system over the next, say, 3 or 4 years?
Absolutely. One of the first things I did after I was confirmed as administrator, within the first 100 days, I launched a series of studies that looked at some of the key challenges that the maritime industry is going to be facing. One of them is the expansion of the Panama Canal. And what does that mean for our country transportation system? So we're working with the Secretary of Transportation, his policy experts, in developing a study where we get a good objective look at exactly what kinds of changes our nation is either going to need or going to expect. And that kind of analysis has never been done. So it's something that will affect everybody. The Panama Canal right now, the largest ship that can get through it can carry about 5,000 20-foot containers, so maybe about half that number. And it's what a standard size, you see on the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. It's going to grow to about 13,000 per ship. And so that's a massive increase in the size of the ships that are going to be transiting through the canal. And what that means for the ports on the east coast of the U.S. and the Gulf Coast of the U.S. and what that impact will be on the west coast of the U.S. is something that we need to understand if we're going to plan and operate a national transportation system. You can imagine that, to offload all the cargo from one of these ships and fully load it at a single port would take 13,000 truck trips. Can you imagine if you lived in a port community and had two of these a week visiting, what it would mean for your commute if you are sharing the road with these trucks, or whether there is a rail line that connects to it? Can you imagine the number of trains and the times they'll be blocking the rail crossings on the highway? These are things that we really need to understand if we're going to take advantage of maybe some of the new efficiencies, or understand where some of our infrastructure investments need to be made.
And this is a perfect example of why you need to expand the conversation and invite the State Departments of Transportation involved and get the folks involved.
Absolutely.
Tremendous impact if it's not done right.
And that was really the first one. We launched three other studies. One is on the future of the Great Lakes. I talked about some of the environmental challenges there with the aging vessels and how we can best tackle some of those challenges. And so we look forward to the results of that study as well. A third one, we're trying to design the next generation marine highway vessel, one that is both commercially viable in the U.S., where we can carry containers or trailers along the coasts or rivers or in our waterways. To design a ship, you need to define the market it'll be competing in. And also the challenge here is, can it be militarily useful? Because if it's militarily useful, then, maybe we can have that conversation with the Navy or the U.S. military about, if this is something useful to you guys, maybe it's worthy of federal investment. We want to make sure that we identify every opportunity for that kind of a win-win situation. The last study we started was a close look at the difference in operating costs between U.S. flagships and foreign flagships. And that was a comprehensive look at how we can best identify those so we can try and tackle them. Now, some of these cost items are pretty obvious. Our mariners in the U.S. have a higher standard of living than many others around the world. They have higher training standards, for safety, environmental, and the kinds of things that they're required to do. And therefore, the cost is a little bit higher. And so some of these challenges, though, that may not seem, on their face to be a real difference, but for instance, other countries don't tax the income their mariners make abroad, whereas ours do. And that can make a significant difference in the competitiveness of some of our workers and in the world market. So we need to get a good handle on these things and try and propose changes wherever we can to make sure that we're remaining the most competitive.
Yeah, so stepping back from the industry trends that you foresee, what about the major opportunities and challenges your organization will encounter in the future? And how do you envision your agency evolving to meet some of these challenges and see some of the opportunities?
I will say that one of the things that I was told before coming to this agency, and one that I've tried to observe very closely, is that the Maritime Administration is just a collection of programs. It's not really a singular mission-focused type of agency. And I think, many agencies probably have that similar problem in the federal government, where it's, a number of programs just kind of fighting on their own and not really leveraging each other. I've tried to focus on integrating the senior staff to try and make them work more as a team. I've also tried to make sure that the agency's mission is felt by every single employee at the agency. And that is essentially to promote and advocate for the maritime industry. And that's something I want to make sure that every person feels that it's their responsibility to do.
I'd like to know how you're promoting the next generation of merchant mariners, and more particularly, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking about a career in public service?
Oh, wow. Next generation of mariners is a tough one. We actually have programs where we work with a number of maritime high schools around the country, and these are specialized high schools that will, you know, help broaden young minds to get them thinking about what it's like to have a career in this industry. But frankly, a lot of what I've learned is that you really need to reach out to folks at a younger age. And so we're trying to do everything we can to reach that level of folks. I'm mostly in the, you know, 7th, 8th grade, kind of junior high age range where people truly are, you know, they still do have an open mind about the types of careers available to them.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today. But more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you. Let me just add that, you know, one of the toughest parts is to try and make people aware about the value of the merchant marine and what it means. A recent video that we put together, I think, really exemplifies just how critical and how important this industry is and the people who work in it and the types of values and dedication that they possess. And it's one that you'll find on the White House blog, the president's blog, as of very recently. And it talks about the contribution of the merchant mariners in the New York, New Jersey port after and on 9/11. They helped evacuate some, you know, 500,000 people in the largest sea lift operation ever. And even Dunkirk wasn't this big in World War II. But they did it with no planning. No organization whatsoever, but they helped get all these people to safety as the World Trade Centers were falling and people were panicking. And, you know, Southern Manhattan is basically an island. And so you're trying to get all these people out. And I can say that the merchant marine community performed admirably.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.